Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.podomatic.com.
Hello, welcome to Luke's English Podcast. It's an absolute pleasure to be talking to you again. And I'm, for some reason, speaking in this kind of way. I don't really know what this intonation or rhythm pattern is that I'm using. It's something related to being like a kind of presenter character. I think that on the news or on the radio, they sometimes speak like this. That's why I'm doing it. It could also be because I've had a little bit too much coffee and that's made me do it, because I don't normally drink coffee. You see, I normally drink tea. And so if I have a bit too much coffee, it kind of makes me start to speak as if I'm a TV presenter on a very serious television program. But I'm not going to keep speaking like that. I'm going to be normal, okay? So this is me being normal now. Okay, so in this episode, I'm going to tell you all about my first impressions of life in Paris. Some of this episode is transcribed. You'll be glad to know. You can read a transcript to some of this. If you go to the website, which is teacherluke.podomatic.com, you can find the transcript there. You can read it if you want to. You can sort of read it and listen to me while you're listening to me. That might help. You can just read it if you want to. If you can't stand the sound of my voice anymore, then you can just read it, or you can just ignore the transcript completely and just listen. It's up to you. It's your choice. I'm just giving you a little bit of extra freedom to decide how you want to live your life and how you want to deal with another episode of Luke's English Podcast. So some of this is transcribed. Some of it's not. You'll hear me kind of speaking off the top of my head, as it were. I'm now in Paris. I'm sitting in the apartment in which I'm living here in Paris. And it's very exciting and very new experience for me. So I'm going to be telling you all about it in this episode. So the transcript, which you'll find on the website, starts here. So if you're wondering when the transcript is going to begin, it starts now. Okay, so I recently moved to Paris and I've been here for about 6 weeks. This episode is all about my first impressions and experiences of living here. It's about my experience of moving to Paris, but it's also about the experience of living in another culture. So in many ways, this is a cross-cultural case study. And if the expression cross-cultural case study sounds a bit boring, you could always think of this episode as a bit like Mr. Bean in Paris or something, in which I am Mr. Bean, a kind of bumbling, foolish English man making loads of mistakes and generally making a fool of himself. That might help keep it amusing. Just keep in mind the image of me getting everything wrong in a famous European capital city. It could be a kind of crap fish out of water type movie, you know, like he was a boy, she was a girl, he was English, she was French, and the city was Paris. When Luke Thompson moved to Europe to be with the girl he loved, he got just a little more than he bargained for. You know, that's a kind of movie trailer for my life in Paris, I suppose. Anyway, if you've ever lived in another country, you might be able to relate to my experiences of being a fish out of water. If you're thinking of moving to another country, you may be able to learn something about what it's like to be out of your comfort zone. If you're from Paris or France, you might like to know what it's like for an English person to live in your city. And if you've never been to Paris, but you've always wondered what it's really like, then let me share my experiences with you. You may have noticed already that this episode contains a lot of vocabulary and expressions relating to cross-cultural experiences. You can read most of what I'm saying by visiting my website, which is http://teacherluke.podomatic.com or http://teacherluke.wordpress.com. I must say at the beginning that I only wish to express my own experiences of living in Paris for just a few weeks. If you are Parisian, French, or know a lot about Paris or France, you might feel that I haven't covered the whole picture yet. I don't consider myself to be an expert on Parisian life by any means. In fact, I feel like there's so much that I don't know. So don't be offended if I've got the wrong end of the stick and misunderstood certain things about life here in Paris. Let me also say that I haven't completely left London behind. The two cities are very close. On the Eurostar, which is a train that connects the two cities, it goes under the sea. Yes, under the actual sea. It's really easy to travel between London and Paris in just a couple of hours. Some people say that London is a Paris suburb or vice versa. So I still maintain my connection with London and with Britain. I'll be regularly going back to London to see my friends and my family, to catch up on what's going on in London, and to keep in touch with my work colleagues at the London School of English. So this is not going to become Luke's French podcast, don't worry. It's still very much Luke's English podcast. In fact, moving to France makes me even more aware of my London roots. I'm an Englishman at heart. Living in France gives me more perspective on this and on the culture of the English language. And hopefully, depending on how things go, here in France I will have more time to devote to doing episodes of the podcast that focus on the English language, culture, and all the other things that you've come to expect from Luke's English podcast. So let me tell you what you're going to hear in this particular episode. First, I'm going to talk a bit about cross-cultural awareness, just to provide a bit of context to the whole thing. Then, in no particular order, I'll go through my general experiences of life in Paris, what I've found different or similar to life in London, what I've found difficult or challenging, and what I've found enjoyable, inspiring, and funny about life here so far. Please leave your comments if you want to share. And as ever, you can always send me a donation to show that you care if you fancy it. It's completely up to you to decide how much you wish to donate, from just £1, $1, or €1. To be honest, I hope you choose the £1 because, well, it's worth a bit more because of exchange rates. So if you have to choose, then, you know, go for £1 maybe. Well, from like £1, dollar, or euro to 100,000 billion trillion pounds, if that's what you think is appropriate. I am, of course, aware that 100,000 billion trillion pounds, which is, I think, 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, world, but, you know, maybe Roman Abramovich listens to this or something. You never know. You know, you can dream. Anyway, it's really easy to donate. You can just click on a donate button on my website, and it's really easy to make a donation really safely using PayPal. Okay, that's it. The begging bit is over. I don't really do any language teaching in this episode, although I will be doing more stuff in the future, getting back to basics and doing more language-oriented episodes with grammar, vocabulary, that kind of thing. All right. I realize I've been doing a lot of just sort of random talking into the microphone recently, but you can look forward to episodes in which I deal with grammar and vocab and the real nuts and bolts of the English language coming soon. However, I've managed to write some pretty detailed notes for this episode and a transcript of a lot of what I'm saying. I don't always do that, but this time I have. So, like I said before, do check out teacherluke.podomatic.com and you can read a lot of this. And that can really help you to work out and learn a lot of the English that I'm using. So, first, a bit about cross-cultural awareness. So, whatever your situation, I think it's always good to have some sense of perspective about the place that you live in. Remember, you may think that the way of life that you're used to is the normal way, that your way of life is correct and another way of life is wrong. That's a pretty basic way to put it, but I think We all think this to a certain extent. We take for granted many of the things that we... I can't read my own writing today. Okay, I'm not going to edit because this is Luke's English podcast and I like to keep it real. So even though I just can't even read what I've written here, I don't care. I'm just I'm going to keep going and I'm not going to edit this bit out just to show you that it's still the real Luke's English podcast here. So that's a pretty basic way to put it, but I think we all think this to a certain extent. We take for granted many things about the way we live. It could just be little things like the way we dress or the way we eat, or it could be bigger things like politics, the politics of the country we're in, or the religion or something. I think most of the time we get used to our own way of life and consider it to be normal. It's only when we leave our culture and live in another one that we realise how different life can be, and that maybe our way is not the only one. Living in another country, not just on holiday but permanently, for at least a few months, can be confusing. It can be frustrating at times, but it can also be exciting, refreshing, inspiring, and humbling. It can open your mind. I think everyone should experience living in another country for a while. Living abroad can make you more tolerant and patient with other people. It should, at least. I mean, that's the idea. Hopefully it doesn't just confirm any xenophobic attitudes or prejudices that you had when you visited the country. I'm sure that that's the case sometimes, but for the most part, I like to think it helps us to realise that it takes all sorts to make a world. It's good to remember that our way of life, our habits and familiar routines, are not the only way to live. When we step out of our comfort zone, we get the chance to realise that we're not always right about everything and that there are other ways to live your life. Hopefully, living abroad helps to prevent us from getting too arrogant or big-headed, like, oh, the rest of the world is stupid and my country is the best. Actually, I think we feel this way more than we like to admit. It means that we're more willing to see differences in the world as something to celebrate rather than something to fight about. That's the idea, of course. That's the theory. In reality, on a day-to-day basis, living abroad can be difficult, confusing, dangerous, infuriating, and hilarious. It takes a while to really get used to living in another country. It probably takes about a year to feel that you understand things, but really you never get completely used to it. It's a constant learning process, but it's good to keep learning. In my opinion, when we live abroad, certainly at the beginning, we learn about three things: about the new culture that we're living in, about the culture we've come from, and about ourselves. Culture shock. I've talked about this before. I don't really believe it's a shock. When it's bad, you feel frustrated with the other culture, or even angry because you see what they do as wrong or ridiculous. It can make you question yourself and make you feel pretty small. You might not even realise that you're experiencing culture shock. You might just feel a bit annoyed that everyone is apparently doing it all wrong. That's really common. These people are stupid, you might think. You make judgments. You might even offend people without realising it, because you're not aware of little cultural rules that you're breaking. You might get offended yourself. It depends on why you're there in the first place. So really it should be named culture frustration, culture rage, culture depression, or culture neurosis. But of course, none of these things are particularly catchy titles. Of course, culture shock can also be really great. When it's good, the feeling is pretty wild. It feels like a crazy adventure which sweeps you away. You can feel inebriated by the excitement and wonder of a new experience. It can be very liberating to be removed from the shackles and limitations of the culture you come from. Certainly, that's why a lot of people travel or decide to live abroad. Travel broadens the mind. I'm sure I don't need to convince you of that. But just in case, allow me to share a couple of sayings made by famous people on the subject of travelling, just so that you're absolutely sure that I am 100% right about this, as if there was any doubt about that. Mark Twain, the famous American author, said, Travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Let me say that again, but slightly better. Mark Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. So what he means is that travel basically kills your prejudice, kills your bigotry, and kills your narrow-mindedness. Bigotry is a kind of narrow-minded view of things that are different. So if you're racist or sexist or very old-fashioned in the way that you think, then you might be guilty of bigotry. And narrow-mindedness, that just means you've got a very conservative view of the world rather than a kind of open-minded liberal approach. St. Augustine said, the world is a book, and those who do not travel read only one page. I think that's pretty clear what that one means. Samuel Johnson said, all travel has its advantages. If the passenger visits better countries, he may learn to improve his own. And if fortune carries him to worse, he may learn to enjoy it. Anyway, enough about all that. Let me tell you about my experiences in Paris. So people back in London, like on the telephone and stuff, keep asking me questions like, so how's Paris then? How's it going? What's it like living in Paris? Do you smell of garlic yet? Do you feel homesick? Is it different to the UK? Are you experiencing culture shock? How are you enjoying the food? What are the people like? Do they refuse to speak English to you, even though they could if they wanted to? Have you got a job yet? Have you learnt French yet? What's it like learning a foreign language? Is it difficult to pronounce the words? Do people really say ooh la la and zut alors or even ha hi ha hi ha? I mean, do they? I wonder. What do all the buildings look like? Are they beautiful? Are people really fashionable and chic? Have you put on loads of weight because of all the rich buttery food you've been eating? Are waiters really rude to you in restaurants? Do people hate you because you're English? Have you managed to understand the ridiculously complicated metro system yet? Have you managed to get an apartment yet? Because apparently that's really hard if you don't have a bank account. Have you managed to get a bank account yet? Because apparently that's really hard if you don't have an apartment. What's it like driving in Paris? Is it strange driving on the other side of the road? Have you driven around the Arc de Triomphe? Is it as impossible and life-threatening as everyone says? What about getting a taxi? Apparently that's impossible. What about the nightlife? Have you been to the Moulin Rouge? Is it like that movie? You know, the one about the Moulin Rouge with Nicole Kidman and Ewan McGregor. I can't remember what it's called, but anyway, have you been to the Moulin Rouge? Have you seen any sexy French movies yet? You know, the black and white arty ones in which people lie around on beds smoking and undressing. What are the girls like, you know? What are they like? Have you been up the Eiffel Tower? How long did it take? Did you walk all the way up? What's the view like? Have you been to the Louvre? Did you see the Mona Lisa? Did she seem happy or unhappy to you or somewhere in between? Have you had sex with Carla Bruni yet? Because everyone else has, apparently. Do they really eat snails and frog's legs and loads of garlic? Does everyone drink champagne and red wine all the time? Have you started riding around on a bicycle yet, wearing a stripy top with a beret on your head, a moustache on your upper lip, a chain of garlic round your neck and some baguettes in the basket? Or is that just a cliché? In fact, what's it really like, Luke? What does it look like, Luke? Look, Luke, like, what's it like? What does it look like, Luke? I mean, do you like love it a lot or a little? Please let us listen, Luke, to you like letting us learn a lot about living in life in... I got that completely wrong. See, this is difficult because I wrote this earlier on, okay? I wrote all this stuff because I wanted to do a really well-prepared episode of Luke's English Podcast. But maybe, you know, I shouldn't try and write notes down because when I read a sort of script, somehow it seems a bit unnatural. It doesn't seem to be like I'm really engaging with you. But anyway, there's not much more of this script left. Let me just try that second bit again. I'm sure that you'll forgive me. Just bear with me, etc., etc. So, what's it really like, Luke? What does it look like, Luke? look, Luke, like, what does it, like, look like, Luke? Do you, like, love it? A lot or a little? Please let us listen, Luke, to you, like, letting us learn a lot about living life in Le French capital of Paris. Okay, let me try and deal with it all. Now, I recently noted down some thoughts on Paris and how it seems a bit different to life in London. So this section is not transcribed because I'm just talking off the top of my head. But below, you can see the notes that I used for this bit. It may contain some of the language that I used. Okay, so I'm going off script now. This bit isn't transcribed, which probably means it's going to sound a little bit more natural. Maybe slightly harder for you to understand, but you know, let's make that sacrifice because it's better, isn't it, if it sounds authentic and natural. I think so. So, in no particular order, here are some notes in a little notepad which I scribbled down just recently. And so this is in no particular order. This is fairly random. So, what does it look like? Well, I remember when I first arrived in Paris, I arrived in Gare du Nord station. That's the north station of Paris. And it's not the most beautiful area of Paris, but nevertheless, I immediately got a sense of the kind of atmosphere of the place. And it sort of struck me as being somehow very 1920s or very kind of old-fashioned. It just the way that the bistros look with their, you know, the front of the restaurants and bistros with the chairs, the beautifully sort of decorated chairs and tables, and the canopies that you find outside bistros and restaurants. When I see those things, it somehow strikes me as being untouched by time. I can imagine that those places looked exactly the same since the whenever, like the 1920s or even earlier than that. So, you know, I can, it's very evocative of kind of the images of Paris that we've seen in like old movies or paintings and things like that. So immediately you get a sense of this history. There's like a long history. Obviously, in the buildings, there are many very large, grand-looking buildings all over the city, and there's a long history. Many, many different sort of stories. Many different things have occurred here. Of course, you know, one of the big things was the French Revolution at the end of the 19th century. I think it was the end of the 1878, I think. Okay, I have to do an edit here and correct myself because what I just said was completely wrong. The French Revolution actually happened near the end of the 18th century, basically between 1789 and 1799. And as you should know, really, it was a period of great social and political change in France that had a massive impact on French history and an impact generally around the world. And that was when the monarchy in France was kind of removed, and instead of a monarchy, it was replaced by a republic. So basically, the royal family were taken and killed on, I think, the storming of the Bastille, or Bastille Day, is the 14th of July. It's celebrated here in France. As it's a kind of French Independence Day, you might say, you know the way they celebrate Independence Day in America. Well, the French Bastille Day is basically the day on which they celebrate the end of the monarchy and the beginning of the French Republic, as we know it now. So, happened at the end of the 18th century. Just had to correct myself there because I couldn't allow myself to tell you something that was wrong. Should have checked it in advance. But there you go. Like I said, I'm kind of new here. I'm new in town. So you've got to forgive me if I make the odd historical mistake. But I've corrected myself now, so everything's fine. Good. On with the show. There were a few sort of episodes in the revolution. But that's certainly one of the biggest differences in terms of the sort of constitution or the way that the state is run in France. That is quite different to the UK because they don't have a royal family. It's a republic. They actually, there was a revolution and they took the royal family and chopped their heads off because they didn't really like them. Whether that's really, I mean, they celebrate this, of course, on Bastille Day. Of course, as you may know, they used the guillotine, and they got a little bit guillotine happy, actually, and sort of so anyone that didn't, I don't really know all the deep history of it, but it seems that a lot of people just ended up getting their heads chopped off. Did it fix all the problems? I don't know, but I think it probably made a big difference. But anyway, there's a great sense that this is a republic, and that it's everyone is very much aware of their rights and their sense of equality and brotherhood and all that kind of thing. That's the idea. Whether on a day-to-day basis, when you're walking along the street, I don't know if people seem that much more together, or if society seems that much more polite, that much more fair or well balanced. I can't really see whether France being a republic is clearly better than, let's say, England being a monarchy. I think in the end, it's still pretty much the same thing. So I find that in Paris, much of the city is very similar. I mean, that may be that I'm new to the place, but a lot of the streets seem to be really similar. Like, they're very, very similarly designed. You get these long terraces, these very large, imposing terraces on these long avenues and very grand looking streets that have big monuments at the end. These avenues, which were designed by Haussmann. I've mentioned him before, this architect who kind of designed many of the streets in Paris. So it does have a kind of uniformity to it, which, and not just a uniformity in the facades of the buildings, but in the sorts of shops and things that you find in the streets. I find that I get lost really easily in Paris. It could also be the way that the streets are laid out. It's not like a grid system, for example, as you get in Barcelona or many places in America. You get these very long diagonal streets, which all meet in these kind of big circular junctions. And these big circular junctions, like the one that you get at the Arc de Triomphe, have sort of seven or eight streets coming off at diagonal angles. So the city's all seems to be all in diagonal streets, which makes it pretty confusing for me. So I get lost easily. All the streets seem to have the same types of shop. There's always a cafe, a bistro, a tabac, which is a tobacconist, a boulangerie, and a Japanese restaurant. There's always a Japanese restaurant for some reason. They love Japanese food here. So whenever I'm walking around Paris with my girlfriend, quite often we'll walk past a boulangerie and she'll go, this is the best boulangerie in Paris. And then we'll end up down another street and she'll go, no, this is the best boulangerie in Paris. And as far as I can tell, there's about sort of nine best boulangeries in Paris. But certainly the quality of the bread is very good. I mean, compared to England, the French bread, you know, baguettes and things. I mean, it might seem to be quite a basic, simple thing, but for me as an English person, the bread is like really good quality and really delicious. It's a bit of a luxury, but something that people here enjoy every day. In England, we're just used to the normal everyday loaves of bread, which, you know, are not quite as soft and delicious as you get here. You get these baskets of bread on the table in restaurants, bread, fresh, hot baguettes of bread from the local boulangeries and things. You actually can smell the smell of cooking bread in the streets, and other things like croissants and stuff like that. So it's lovely. It's luxurious to eat such good quality bread and pastries. A lot of it does seem to contain a lot of butter. I mean, croissants are just basically, it's basically butter in kind of solid form, as far as I can tell. I don't know how they managed to get so much butter into these things, but I suppose that's the key to making them taste so good. But I don't think I could eat them every day. They're not really healthy enough. Certainly the eating habits in Paris are different to the eating habits in the UK. I mean, you know, in the UK, we're not exactly famous for our eating habits, are we? Well, we're famous for having bad eating habits, or at least having bad food. But Paris, on the other hand, is famous for its cuisine and famous for having excellent food. Of course, we all know that. But there, you know, there are certain things that are different about the way that they, let's say, eat dinner in this country. In the UK, it's quite common to have cheese at the end of a meal. So you'd start with a starter of some kind, something savoury as your first course. The main course then would be, you know, like sort of meat and vegetables or something. And then after that, you'd have a dessert, something sweet. And you'd have coffee, and then right at the end you have cheese. Well, here in France, in Paris, it seems they start with an apéritif often, which will be kind of like quite a sweet tasting alcoholic liqueur of some kind, and then go on to the first course, which could be, you know, similar to the first course in the UK, really a kind of savoury plate of, I don't know, it could be some pâté or something like that, and then the main course. Lots of things like lots of steak. I mean, they eat raw beef, steak tartare, which is basically, for me, it looks like just a load of like minced beef that the chef forgot to cook. But no, that's the correct way to eat it here. And it's kind of something that people eat a lot, just a plate of raw beef. It's not really my cup of tea yet, but I'm sure that I'll grow to like it. So the kind of main course, obviously it's not just raw beef, there's loads of different main courses, lots of delicious kinds of food, and then a dessert, and you have these very rich cakes and very delicious desserts and so on. And then after that, I've got it wrong, the cheese comes before the dessert, I've discovered. This is from eating dinner at people's houses. They actually serve the cheese first. Now, my girlfriend, who's French, was kind of very surprised to discover that we have cheese at the end. And in some people's opinion, some French people's opinion, this makes the English strange. This is just one example of the little differences that we notice when we, you know, live life in another country. We have the cheese at the end. In France, they have the cheese before the dessert. So in France, it sort of goes sweet, savoury, 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 sweet. So you have to end on something sweet. You can't end on savoury. Whereas in England, we do. We end with the cheese sometimes. I'm splitting hairs, really. That's not a massive difference. Now, I know nothing about wine. But it seems that most people here kind of have a fairly decent knowledge of wine and grape varieties and things like that. And when you order a wine in a restaurant, the waiter presents you with a very long wine list, and you're supposed to very carefully choose which wine you'd like to buy. Whereas I'm just like, well, which one is the cheapest? You know, I don't really know very much about wine, but you know, I hope to learn. I'm certainly going to practice. Cafe culture is totally different to pub culture. Obviously, as you already know from previous episodes of Luke's English Podcast, when you go to the pub, you go to the bar, and you have to approach the staff at the bar, and you get your drinks and your food there, and you come back to the table. Whereas in Paris, you go and just sit down, and you let the waiter come and serve you. So basically it's the responsibility of the waiter to know exactly what's going on. The waiter should be able to observe who has just arrived and who's sitting at which table and what their orders are and things like that. So you just go to a cafe and you just sit down and just relax and wait for the waiter to come and serve you, which is lovely. I mean, I'm really getting used to that now. It's great to be able to just go to a cafe and just sit yourself down at a table and just start watching the world go by while the waiter comes and, you know, brings you coffee or water or a beer or something like that. It's very pleasant. When I first arrived, though, I didn't really know what I was doing. You know, I would kind of avoid going to cafes because I was scared scared that I would do something wrong, and scared also that I would have to speak French, because that's, you know, it's slightly stressful for me. My French is improving, and I understand, of course, that for it to improve properly, I need to put myself into these slightly stressful situations. But I'm very very conscious of sort of breaking some little social rules, or very conscious of, coming across as rude. So, you know, it's a little bit stressful. so I would kind of go to cafes, and I'd sort of think, can I really just sit down? Do I just sit at a table? Don't I have to like announce to the waiter that I've arrived and that I'm going to be sitting over there? It seemed somehow inappropriate for me to just plonk myself down at a table and expect to be served, you know. But I'm getting used to the service. It's nice. It's quite common to kind of actually go and sit at the bar in a cafe, and you get your coffee served directly, and you just stand at the bar and you drink your coffee like that. I see a lot of people in the mornings when they're in a bit of a rush, they kind of manage to stop for a few minutes and just get a quick coffee, and it's a bit cheaper if you buy the coffee at the bar. The coffee is a little bit different here than it is in the UK, I suppose, and in America. It's that sort of Italian style espresso coffee, which is really good. The drinking culture, not coffee, but drinking alcohol, is a little bit different. There is less binge drinking. Binge drinking is an expression that you might sort of read in the newspapers in the UK. Binge drinking means drinking a lot quite quickly in a fairly short period of time in order to get drunk. A binge is when you drink or eat a lot of something in a short period of time. So you could do like a chocolate binge if you love chocolate, and then you feel very guilty afterwards, or do some binge drinking. That's where you go to the pub with your friends for a few hours and you drink lots before the pub closes. Now, people say that binge drinking is a huge public health issue in the UK, because it's very unhealthy and it, you know, costs the National Health Service a lot of money. And that may well be true. Part of the reason I think that we have a binge drinking culture in England is that our pub opening hours are a little bit strange. That's certainly one of the complaints that people have when they come to the UK. They go, why do your pubs close at 11 o'clock? That's ridiculous. That's when, you know, we're ready to start drinking, not stop. Well, in England, I don't really know why the pubs close at 11 o'clock, but they do. Even though many of them have 24-hour serving licenses, most of them still close at about 11 or 12 o'clock. As a result, perhaps what happens is that people go to the pub and they drink quite a lot in quite a short period of time, because they know that at 11 they won't be able to get any more. So they kind of do all their drinking in just a few hours. And then, of course, you get people coming out onto the street on a Friday night at 12 o'clock just completely pissed out of their minds, getting into fights, causing trouble. It's total chaos in city centres on a Friday night. But I don't get the impression it's the same here. The culture is slightly different. People don't seem to binge drink quite as much. I mean, people certainly drink, but they don't do it in the seemingly irresponsible way that we do in the UK. They seem to sit down and eat and drink at the same time, rather than in the UK, where people kind of will stand up in very crowded pubs drinking, often missing out on their dinner and just going straight to the pub and just drinking all evening. Very unhealthy. Whereas in France, people tend to sit down, they drink with their food, they enjoy the savouring the taste of wine, rather than just seeing it as something that they need to drink in order to get drunk. So that's pretty good. That, I think, is pretty healthy. Of course, I have seen French people getting really drunk at parties and things like that, but it's not quite as common in my experience as it is in the UK. It all seems a little bit more civilised, perhaps. Champagne in France is cheaper than it is in the UK and in the rest of the world. So in England, champagne is a luxury. It's the sort of thing that you only drink on special occasions. Whereas here in Paris, it's more common to enjoy a glass of champagne. In fact, I've been to a couple of parties here where I've seen loads of bottles of champagne in the bath. So they keep all the champagne in the bath covered in ice. Now, I don't think it's that common. My French friends tell me that it's not very common. But to be honest, I've been to 4 or 5 parties here, and at least 2 of those parties had bathtubs full of champagne. So either I'm hanging out with very decadent people, or it's sort of more common to drink lots of champagne at a party than it is in the UK. So let's see. I've noticed that often you find that water flows through the streets. So by this I mean that the gutters in the streets, the gutters are the bits at the edge of the street, between the pavement and the street, the gutter. That's where all the water will flow down. So for some reason, I don't really know why, perhaps if you're French or Parisian or you know the answer to this, you can tell me why, but it seems in the afternoons often, you get lots of water flowing through the gutters. So you get these long streams of water flowing down the gutters in the streets, which is, it seems very clean. I suppose it's a way of cleaning the gutters out. It's quite nice to have all this flowing water around. And unless, of course, you step in it in a pair of Converse All-Stars, in which case you get very wet feet. But it's quite funny to see, or quite interesting to see, all this flowing water. And I think to myself, isn't that a huge waste of water? But maybe in France or in Paris, water conservation is less of an issue. In England, we seem to have to look after our water a lot more. We're very conscious of saving water, but maybe in France that's less of an issue. And it's not just in Paris that I've seen water flowing down the gutters of streets. Also, I've seen it in towns in the south of France when I've been there on holiday. In fact, I remember as a child, my family, we used to go to the south of France every year, and we'd spend our summer holidays in little villages and towns in the south. And when they used to flow the water through the gutters of the streets, my brother and I and my dad and my mum would play games. We would make these paper boats out of pieces of paper and then sail them down the streets. So seeing the water flowing through the streets, it creates a nice atmosphere. I suppose it cleans the gutters, and it reminds me of my childhood holidays in France. Maybe one of the reasons that they flow water through the streets is because sometimes the streets are a little bit dirty. What I mean is there's quite a lot of dog turds. There are lots of dog turds on the street, lots of dog poo. I think you know what I'm talking about. Dog shit. Yeah, of course, shit is the rude word. Dog poo. There's quite a lot of dog poo on the streets. Now, that for me is slightly ironic, considering the buildings are so nicely presented. The people are very smart. They obviously care a lot about their appearance. And yet on the street, you get quite a lot of shit and piss as well. It's not uncommon to find kind of urine stains on the pavement because, I don't know, homeless people, maybe homeless people decide that they can just urinate on the pavement. But I'm sure it's not just homeless people. I think it might be, not homeless people as well. Maybe on a Friday night after a few drinks, they need the toilet. They just think, well, I'll just go right here in the street. For me, that's quite, as a Brit, that's quite odd, because it's pretty rude or unacceptable to sort of urinate in a public place like that. And yet often on a Saturday morning, I'll go out onto the pavement and I'll see kind of piss stains on the streets. I don't know, maybe if you've got to go, you've got to go. But it seemed a little bit strange for me. I haven't yet pissed in the street, but maybe, the day will come when I when I do it myself, and then maybe that's when, you know, I will finally have sort of been initiated into real Paris life. So yeah, dog poo on the street. So you've got to watch out when you're walking around. If you don't watch where you're going, you might step in a turd. So, you know, be careful of that. It doesn't happen very often, mainly because I think I'm quite cautious, quite vigilant, and I manage to avoid stepping in the poo. But maybe that's why they kind of wash the streets a bit. They need to wash away all the crap. I don't know. Well, I don't know. I'm yet to see kind of poo floating down the street, but, you know, I'm sure it's going to be entertaining when I do see that. Yes. Yeah, so tramps piss or other people's piss, I don't know. Every now and then you do get a lingering smell of urine in the air, but that's balanced out by the lovely smells of, you know, perfume and fresh bread. But, you know, it's not uncommon to get a little whiff of urban urine, let's call it.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's see, what else? Cars, driving here. I noticed that cars tend to bump into each other a bit more. I think this is because parking spaces are really few and far between. They're really limited. There isn't much space to park your car. So when you do find even a tiny space, you squeeze all the way into it. And even if that means like bumping into the car in front of you or into the car behind you, it seems to be fairly common to like bump to, even, you know, for cars to press bumpers against each other in order to fit into a tight space. In London, if you so much as touch another person's car with your car, then you could be in serious trouble. And you, if you scratch someone else's car, then you sort of feel obliged to leave your telephone number or to apologize in some way or to just escape the scene of the crime as quickly as possible. Whereas in Paris, it seems to be sort of more of an everyday thing that you might bump into people's cars. I am not a car owner myself, so I don't really know. Maybe French people, Parisian people get equally as angry if someone bumps into their car as a British person would. It's just that it happens more often because there is less space for parking here. I don't know, but I've certainly seen cars bumping into each other a bit more, and I always thought, is that strange? That's strange, isn't it? Are they just bad drivers? Are they just inconsiderate? Or is it just that there is less space? I haven't really worked that out yet. But driving for me is quite a challenge in Paris, mainly because obviously in the UK we drive on the left, so the car goes on the left side of the road, whereas in Paris, like in most other countries in the world, yes, I admit it, most of the other countries in the world drive on the right. In Paris they do the same thing, they drive on the right. You sit on the left of the car, but you drive on the right. So that's a bit strange for me to get used to, because obviously I'm used to sitting on the right-hand side of the car, controlling the gear stick with my left hand. But when I'm in France, I sit on the left side of the car, control the gear stick with my right hand, and I drive on the right side of the road. It's very complicated, I know. But how it feels is that when I'm in the driving seat, it feels like there's too much car on the right. The car is really big on the right and not enough car on the left. So I'm very conscious that somehow I'm going to, you know, crash into something on the right side of the right hand side of the car. So that's pretty weird. Plus, also, just generally, it seems a bit more chaotic to drive in Paris. I'm really not used to it at all. One of the worst experiences was when I was driving my girlfriend's dad's car. So that was already pretty stressful. But not only that, I was driving into Paris from the countryside. So driving into Paris generally means you have to drive around the ring road. There's a big road that goes all the way around Paris, and it's called the Boulevard Périphérique. And it's a ring road that goes around Paris, and it's very busy, and it's kind of, the drivers can be a bit aggressive, and it's a bit chaotic trying to find the right exit and so on. You've got to be very vigilant and very careful. But the most frightening moment for me was when I was entering the Périphérique from a slip road. So a slip road is the road that you use to get onto another big road, in this case the Boulevard Périphérique, the ring road going around Paris. From a slip road onto a motorway in England is pretty clear, because the slip road goes all the way down and then it joins the motorway with its own lane. You carry on driving on your own lane, and after about a kilometre, that lane gently feeds into the rest of the traffic. So I'm used to like driving down the slip road, and you keep going along the slip road for a long time, and then you gently join the traffic. Here in Paris, there's no slip road. You just go the road. Let me explain myself clearly. There is a slip road, but it doesn't continue for a very long time. It just throws you directly into the oncoming traffic. So that was a big shock for me on my first time driving on the wrong side of the road, in my girlfriend's dad's car, you know, very conscious that I shouldn't damage it. My girlfriend in the passenger seat, she doesn't drive, so she's completely oblivious to the challenge, to the stress that I'm under. You know, I'm there like a sort of... I'm there like a pilot trying to crash land a plane, and she's just, you know, enjoying a nice drive in Paris. So I'm there kind of sweating, trying not to have a nervous breakdown while I drive onto the Boulevard Périphérique, and no long slip road. So I'm driving along and I think, oh, it'll be all right. I'll just go along the slip road and then I'll join the traffic. But then at the last second, I realize there's no more slip road. Traffic. So that was a pretty frightening moment. I had to slam on the brakes. I had to hit the brakes, and I was scared that someone was going to crash into the back of me. It was exciting, ladies and gentlemen, but you'll be glad to know that, you know, I did it, of course. You know, I managed to do it. I got onto the Boulevard Périphérique. I made it round. I got off. The car was undamaged. I lost a few hairs in the process, but you live and learn, basically. So driving is pretty strange sometimes. Motorists don't always stop. It takes a bit of getting used to, let's say. I tend to find just generally in the street, people stare a lot more than they do in London. By stare, I mean they kind of look at you a lot more. I feel more self-conscious when I go out into the street in Paris. I feel kind of aware that people are maybe checking me out, that they're looking at me. And I don't think it's just that I'm paranoid. I genuinely think people tend to look at each other or look at each other's clothes or appearance a lot more here in Paris than they do in London. You could, you know, it could be rude. Sometimes I think it's rude, frankly, when, for example, I'm standing waiting for a train and I realize that the person next to me is just quite rudely just looking at me, looking at my clothes. Maybe they don't consider it to be rude, but for me, I think it's pretty rude to stare. And I encounter that more here in Paris than I do back home in London. Maybe I kind of stick out like a sore thumb. maybe people can't help looking at me because they think, who is this weird freak who is dressed in such a kind of shabby, unconventional way? Although, to be honest, I'm not really unconventional, but maybe people just check out my clothes. Maybe that's just what people do in Paris. But it seems a bit strange to kind of stare like that at people. But I think people do take quite a lot of care over their appearance here. People in general, I think, are really quite chic. They dress very well. They dress smart. They wear these nice silk scarves. They tend to wear sort of smarter shirts and trousers. People are very well dressed. So it's not really a myth. I think it's true that Parisians, they like to be well presented. And so, you know, when you step out in public, it's the done thing to dress yourself up, to look nice, to look presentable. But does that give people justification to stare at each other? I don't know. I'm certainly learning to get used to that. I don't know if it's my imagination, but sometimes I feel that people seem a little bit more rude in public. Maybe they're just more direct. And in London, people are a bit sort of reserved. But I get the impression that people just are a bit more rude. You know, they, as I said, they stare a bit more. They don't seem to be aware of their own personal space in the same way that we are in London. Maybe it's just that Londoners are a bit uptight. But I think that in London, we're quite careful not to bump into each other. We give each other a bit more personal space in crowded places, like on the Underground. We're very conscious of like trying to get out of each other's way. I think certainly on the Underground, people are quite considerate. They don't, you know, they try to avoid bumping into each other. They try to avoid getting in each other's way. But I find here in Paris, people tend to just bump into each other more. They seem to be slightly less aware of their personal space. And so you tend to find people pushing and shoving and bumping into each other a little bit more over here. Let's see. In London, I think that people, on one hand, are more polite and considerate, and on the other hand, you get the sense that people just don't really care about you at all, which I quite like. You know, I've grown to like that, the sense that you've got a bit more anonymity, and if you want to dress differently, if you want to be a bit eccentric or slightly odd looking, then you can, and people aren't really going to judge you for it. And in fact, they're kind of like, yeah, do whatever you want. You can dress however you like. I don't really care. That's the feeling you get in London. Whereas in Paris, it seems that, you know, it feels like a smaller community. And it feels like people are slightly more judgmental of your appearance. That's the impression I get. I think people in Paris are, I think they're a little bit more conservative, I must say, certainly about clothing and things like that. And if you dress a little bit weirdly or differently, I think you're going to get, people are going to stare at you. And that feels a bit unfriendly at times. I mean, it's not a big problem for me because I don't really like to dress that strangely. I'm not a goth or a punk or anything like that. But certainly I get the impression that people tend to dress slightly more conservatively here. But very smart, very chic, very fashionable. In fact, I think being chic is a kind of a way of life. It's almost as if the kind of grand elegance of Paris, the beautiful presentation and elegance and sort of formal presentation of Paris is reflected in its people, who also are quite sort of slightly formally presented and quite nicely dressed. Obviously, I can't make generalizations. There are plenty of people in Paris who don't dress formally. You know, they wear the jeans and T-shirts, trainers and that sort of thing. But generally speaking, there is a sense that people are quite fashion conscious, quite smart, quite chic. And, well, Paris is famous for this. It's famous for its fashion and its fashion brands and boutiques and things like that. I'm not sure if it's just that I don't understand the culture very well, but people seem to be slightly less humorous or maybe slightly less ready for humour. In London, I get the impression that people are always kind of, people use humour, they use self-effacing humour, irony, they make jokes about themselves as a way of sort of getting rid of any social tension or awkwardness. Whereas in Paris, people are just a bit more ready to, you know, have a conflict if that's the way it is. Like if you bump into someone in the street, then rather than kind of going, oh, sorry, my mistake, it tends to be like, oh, putain, you know, get out of the way, you idiot. Putain, by the way, is a word that I hear every day, and it's a rude French word. I think, I'm not sure what it means. Putain, I think it means bitch or something like that. Anyway, it's just like, it's a bit like the equivalent of saying the F word. But people say it all the time without even realizing it. You know, putain, you know, it's very common. I haven't quite mastered it yet, by the way. But I don't know if it's fair for me to say that people seem less humorous. I think it's more a case that in London, people use humour all the time. You know, it's like people are always ready to make fools of themselves or to use self-effacing humour, to be a bit of to joke around a lot. And I certainly don't believe that the Parisians are against using humour. It's certainly not the case. I think it's just reserved for certain situations. For example, waiters in restaurants, they are often really quite humorous. And I noticed that waiters tend to banter with customers in a humorous way. And that's where the humour is. Or maybe when you go into a shop, the shopkeeper might be a bit humorous with you. But it's not the same kind of ironic, deadpan kind of humour that you get in England. In fact, in France, it seems that when someone tells you a joke, they kind of show you that it's a joke by laughing when they make the joke as well. So they share the joke with you. So it's like, oh, I'm telling you a joke, you know, like that. They kind of slap the knee and show everyone that this is a joke, you know. Whereas in England, because humour is always there to an extent, the delivery of a joke might be less obvious. And what often happens is that two people who are sharing a joke, they don't necessarily laugh about it. They just carry on speaking in an ironic way and just continue the joke because that's sort of more fun. You don't actually have to announce that it's a joke. You just continue living in and continue the jokey conversation as if it's just a normal conversation. What does that mean? Well, who knows? I'm sure we'll let's leave that up to the sociologists and the cultural theorists and things about exactly what English humour really means. And perhaps I can try and cover it in a podcast episode at some point in the future. So it seems that people are less ironic, less deadpan. When they are funny, it's more obvious that they're being funny, and the humour tends to happen in certain places. Maybe in France they put less value on humour. In the UK, we value humour a lot. It's like a really important part of our daily lives, and we like to go around making each other laugh. We love comedians, and we have comedy shows all over the city on every night of the week, whereas here in Paris, comedy is less widespread. I've seen stand-up comedy, French stand-up comedy on TV, and there isn't very much of it. It's not like in London where it's just every channel there's a comedy show on. In France, there is comedy, but it's more like drama in a way. It's more like comic drama rather than out-and-out stand-up comedy. Anyway, as I said, I don't have all the answers. If you feel like you understand French or Parisian culture better than me, please do leave a comment. Just, you know, what do you think? And even if you recognize any of these things in your country, because obviously I've got listeners from all over the world, leave a comment as well. You know, does Parisian French culture sound similar to yours or different? In what way? Let's see. Yeah, it seems that in France people are a bit more formal. For example, when you meet someone for the first time, it's quite customary to say, bonjour, monsieur, hello, sir, je suis enchanté de vous connaître, which is like, I'm enchanted to meet you, rather than in England, it's like, hi, how's it going? Wow, great, it's really nice to meet you. We're a bit more informal, whereas in Paris, people are slightly more formal. Maybe the example I've given there is, if you're French, you might be thinking, oh, that's not true. We just say, oh, bonjour, enchanté, or salut, or something. But just to give you an example, when I met my girlfriend's French parents, my girlfriend said to me, look, you've got to introduce yourself in the right way. You've got to say bonjour, monsieur, to my dad. You have to call them vous at the beginning. You know, in French, they have the vous form and the tu form. Vous is the formal you, and tu is the informal you. Of course, in English, we just have you for both. So the impression was that I had to be a bit more formal when I met my girlfriend's parents, whereas when my girlfriend met my parents, she was saying, oh, you know, what should I say? How shall I introduce myself? And I said to her, just say hi. Hi, and call my, parents by their first names. Hi there. Oh, it's really nice to meet you. And she felt quite uncomfortable about this idea that she could be quite so informal on a first meeting. So I think that's an example of how the French are slightly more formal than the English. I think also the language, French language, is similar to English in many ways, often because of all the Latin words that we share. So Latin-oriented words. So it's the Latin words, in my opinion, which are usually the more formal ones. And in English, we have things like phrasal verbs and other expressions, which tend to be less formal. But in French, they use what in English is the more formal style more than we do. So it feels like French is a more formal culture in that way. Obviously, once you get to know French people and you become their friends, then there's no need for formality anymore. But I get the sense that at the beginning, there's a bit more of a formal protocol than there is in England. Let's see, other differences. Well, of course, they speak a different language. That's a big difference. Let's see, sirens. The sirens are different. I wonder if you know what I'm talking about. By sirens, I mean the noises that police cars and ambulances make. So in the UK, police cars sort of go, that kind of thing, right? Whereas in Paris, they kind of go, anyway, it seems like a small difference to me. It might seem like a small difference to you, but when you're used to hearing these sounds of the city, and then in France, they have like a different sound. Feels different. It feels a bit like the French sirens are like a melody of some kind. In fact, maybe the best way to express this is if I let Bill Bailey, the English comedian, explain it. So now you're going to hear Bill Bailey talking about sirens in the UK and sirens in France, and he explains it. By demonstrating the sirens on his keyboard, and he then goes into a kind of French song, and he sings some French lyrics. So have a listen to Bill Bailey talking about the difference between police sirens or ambulance sirens in the UK and ambulance sirens in French. I'll translate the lyrics of the song which he sings in French afterwards. Let's see. By the way, Bill Bailey's French, I'm sure, is not perfect French. It's a kind of English approximation of French. But anyway, I will explain it to you afterwards if you don't understand the French. So let's see. Here we go. Bill Bailey and ambulance sirens.
See, everything about European life suggests a much more laid-back lifestyle. Even things like sirens. Here are sirens, very, very functional. And sort of says, come on, come on, out of the way. More than my job's worth. Which to me denotes disappointment. Interestingly, you never even go the other way, do you? You never do that. Here he comes up. Well, there he goes. Because that will be defying the laws of physics, wouldn't it? That will be an ambulance attending an emergency in another dimension. Here, very functional. European sirens, a lot more lyrical, aren't they? It's like, yes, there is an accident, but let's enjoy the ride. In fact, the French ones are like this. That's just the bit you hear as it goes past. If you listen to it all down the street, it's like this. Attention. Nous sommes blessés. Nous avons un homme, il s'appelle Jean-Michel. Sa jambe est cassée. Avec une jeune fille, elle s'appelle Gisèle. C'est si belle. Il montait dans un arbre pour faire l'amour. Il adoptait la position missionnaire. C'est populaire. Il est tombé, sa jambe est cassée. Attention.
Okay, that was Bill Bailey there talking about sirens. You can see the YouTube video for that clip on the website, of course, if you want to. Now, let me just explain what he said there. I mean, what he was singing, because obviously he was singing in French, and I expect most of you don't speak French. So he was saying, attention, we are injured. We have a man. He's called Jean-Michel. His leg is broken. With a young girl. She's called Gisèle. She's so beautiful. They climbed up a tree to make love. They adopted the missionary position. It's popular. He fell. He broke his leg. Attention. So that's it. I mean, it's in French, obviously, it sounds a bit better. So that's what he was singing. So, yes, the sirens sound a bit different. Fine. I think we've dealt with that one. What else? The buildings are very grand and beautiful. Yes, the interiors are very lovely and gorgeous and so on. I think that the flats, the accommodation is really good standard. It seems that the accommodations are of a really good high quality. A lot of them have really lovely wooden floors. They're very well presented, in my opinion. Paris in general is smaller than London, so for me it feels a bit more like a town in a way, because I mean, even today I walked from the centre of the city back to where we're living, and it didn't really take me that long. Whereas in London, if you walked from the centre to like the residential areas, then you know it would take you an hour or more in many cases. So London is huge, really. Paris seems to be smaller. Maybe it's just because real Paris, genuine Paris, is only the sort of main central area. In fact, many people live in what's called the suburbs all the way around Paris, and then outside of that you've got some really like rough areas. So Paris is weird because it's quite difficult to live in the center of Paris. Actually, you need to be able to like afford quite expensive rent and all these sorts of things. It's really hard to find accommodation. So what happens is many people who can't afford to live in the centre get pushed out to the edges of the city. And even there are some areas around the outskirts of Paris where there are lots of kind of very poor people living in quite bad conditions. I haven't really seen that for myself, but that's what I've been told anyway. The feeling in town is, well, it feels a little bit more chilled out sometimes. It's kind of a bit more laid back, except obviously at rush hour when it's really hectic and chaotic. I'm not completely sure about the music yet. I haven't really investigated music in France. Obviously, France has got its own musical traditions, the sort of chanson, traditional French songs and so on. But it seems, I may be wrong, but it seems to have a less diverse musical heritage than London. Obviously, it's got the opera house and all that sort of thing. But London's got its opera houses too and its classical music. But London also has all of those modern musical cultures associated with it. You know, the 60s music, the sort of all of the British bands that came out of London during the 1960s, all of the British bands that used London as their base, people like the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, the Who, the Small Faces, and Jimi Hendrix even though he was American. A lot of these bands were based in London. Then, of course, you've got the sort of Jamaican parts of the Caribbean parts of London, which give it that kind of Jamaican reggae influence to London. You also associate punk with London and many other types of music too. Whereas France, it's less internationally famous for its music, maybe because of the language thing, you know. Maybe it's just because the language of modern pop music is English, and so naturally a lot of that's going to come out of London. But I have been to some live music venues here in Paris, and they do some really great live music. So, you know, maybe you just have to look a little bit harder before you find the musical culture here. Obviously, there's jazz. There's a culture of jazz in France, which is quite traditional. And they have these kind of caves in the centre of town, these jazz clubs in the caves, the catacombs under the street. And they're really atmospheric and really great places to go and see live jazz and to dance to jazz. It's very, very good fun. Let's see. There isn't very much curry in France. Obviously, Paris is passionate about its own food, and it has, you know, some international food, you know, African food and Japanese food, as I've mentioned, Chinese food and things like that. But there's not so much Indian food. And in London, obviously, we've got like very old connections with India, and as a result we have many, many Indian restaurants in London. And as a Londoner, you know, I love Indian food, I love curry, and I would eat curry regularly, so I miss having curry. I'm yet to find a really good curry house in Paris that serves a really good, really hot, spicy jalfrezi or something like that. So I'm looking forward to having a curry. I mean, I'm sure I'll find one in Paris eventually, but I might have to go back to London before I can get like a really good hot curry again. It's also harder to find a really good cup of tea here. The milk is slightly different. It's pasteurized in a different way. And also it's not very common to drink tea with milk. You might think, oh, tea with milk, are you mad? But no, I'm not mad. I'm definitely...
Thanks very much for listening to Luke's English Podcast. Don't forget,
we're not finished yet, Luke.
Luke.podomatic.com
for more information. See, that just shows how long this episode is, because clearly longer than the previous episode, because it's not the first time that's happened. I've been talking for so long that I've reached the ending jingle from the previous episode. I really have to wrap this episode up. But, you know, I've got so many things to say. I've just got so many things to say about life here in Paris. I realise that sometimes episodes of Luke's English Podcast are very long. But, you know, I made the decision quite a long time ago that it's okay to do longer episodes of the podcast sometimes, because that's the joy of podcasting. That's the magic of it. You don't have to listen to it all in one go. You can listen to a bit, stop, do something else, wait a couple of days if you want, come back to it, listen to the rest. Especially if you're using iTunes, because iTunes is clever, because with podcasts, it will, when you stop it, it knows when you stopped it, and it'll come back to that position again. So, you know, it's all right. I guess this is just going to be a longer one. More is more, not less, as we've already established in previous episodes. So I'm going to keep going. It's a little bit harder to get a good cup of tea, in my opinion. I mean, a good couple of English tea. That's like a strong black tea with some milk, just the way I like it. But I can do that at home. I've got some milk here. I've got a teapot. I brought some tea with me from England. You see, I'm still utterly English at heart because, you know, I can't live without my cups of tea. So slightly harder to get cups of tea. The underground, the metro system, I find it baffling and confusing. The map seems to be really difficult to understand. I'm sure it's not really that difficult to understand, but I don't know. It seems pretty mind-blowing to me. Maybe it's just because I'm used to looking at the London Underground map, and that seems so clear to me. And the French one is just like looking at a ball of string or something. It's really difficult to get my head around, but I'm getting there slowly but surely. So the metro system, it's great, of course. I love it because it's really quick. It takes you across town really fast, and it's really, really good. It's really efficient. But I have to say, I don't think it has the same character or same kind of personality that the London Underground does. Obviously, the London Underground is, yeah, it might be less spacious, true, because the tunnels it uses tend to be smaller and the trains are a little bit smaller. But I find the Paris Metro to be a little bit dark and a bit kind of gloomy. And I know I'm not the first to say this, it does smell of pee quite a lot. I'm not the first person, and I won't be the last person to say that. Frankly, stinks of piss sometimes, and I don't really know why. You know, is that because French people like to urinate on the underground? Is that why? Or is it because tramps, homeless people, find their way into the stations? And even then, why are they pissing in the station as well? I don't get it. Who decided that the metro system was an appropriate place to urinate? I mean, I don't get it. I don't really know what is that. And I'm not even sure if that's the only reason why it smells. Maybe it's because it's close to the sewage systems, and so sometimes the smell comes through. But it, you know, I think it does smell a bit. It's not that bad. It's not always that bad. But there are times when you definitely get a sense of like, whoa, that smells bad. Why does that smell so bad? I don't know. I'm not saying that the underground doesn't smell sometimes. It does too. And, you know, the underground is definitely pretty dirty. But the Paris Metro is consistently smelly. You have to admit, French people, you have to admit it's true. I don't really know why. I think also it's, you know, Parisian people complain about that too. I think it's one of the most common complaints that people have in my experience. Right, I'm nearly finished here. Okay. So, yes, I mentioned before that people can seem a little bit judgmental. Maybe that's just the way that they come across to me as an English person. They can seem a little bit aloof, you know, a little bit standoffish, a little bit arrogant. That they're kind of quite infamous for seeming to be a little bit arrogant or a little bit sort of, I don't know. I don't know really how to describe it, a little bit judgmental or pretentious. But in my experience, when you meet French people properly, when you meet them in a friendly way, that they're absolutely lovely, and they, you know, I've all of the people I've met so far, all the people I've made friends with, have just been really, really nice and sweet people. Yet there is that sense of there being slightly unfriendly atmosphere sometimes. Maybe it's just because I'm not speaking French very well yet, and I mean, some people say that in France they don't like to speak English. And that they will refuse to speak English to you if you go up to them and say, excuse me, can you tell me how to get to the river? And they will kind of go, je ne comprends pas, you know, when they actually do speak English. In my experience, they don't do that. And a lot of people will speak English to me even when I make an effort to speak French to them. And they're just like, oh, come on, I'll speak English to him. So I find that people are genuine, generally pretty friendly. I mean, if you're nice to them, then they'll be nice back to you. It's no good just going up to them and expecting them to speak English when, you know, you're in their country. Of course, they're not going to be that friendly towards you in that situation. But if you kind of maybe try and speak a bit of French first, and then, you know, they might try and help you by speaking English. You kind of, it's give and take, isn't it? I mean, my French is not quite good enough yet. So a lot of the time I speak a bit of French, and then the conversation breaks down and the person kind of decides, okay, I think now is probably a good moment for me to start speaking English to this guy because his French is awful. That's probably what they're thinking. Getting an apartment, I've mentioned the process is very complicated. There's a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of red tape. It seems that landlords, before they will accept a tenant, need to check absolutely every single aspect of your personal and private history. You know, they need to know exactly where you're from, what you do, how much money you've got in your bank account, how much money you used to have in your bank account, how much money you're going to have in your bank account. They need copies of your contract. They need copies of your bank account details. They need absolutely everything to make sure that you will pay them on time. So the process of getting an apartment can be very, very complicated because of all of the hoops, all of the bureaucratic hoops that you have to jump through. Let's see. But, you know, the light here is beautiful. When the sun shines in the morning, when there's a clear day, it's absolutely beautiful light, and it's genuinely stunning sometimes. I can stand at the top of, for example, Boulevard Malesherb and look down the street, and it's stunning. It's beautiful, these tree-lined boulevards with these grand buildings on either side and often big landmarks and the Eiffel Tower in the distance. I mean, it is a stunningly beautiful place to be. The colour of the stone that's used here in Paris, places like Jardin de Luxembourg, which is an absolutely beautiful park. I mean, it really is one of the world's most beautiful cities. It's a fantastically gorgeous place. Sometimes it feels a little bit imposing, these very big building facades with their big grand doorways. It can feel like you're very small, you know, you just feel insignificant compared to these huge grand buildings. So yeah, it can make you feel a little bit insignificant at times, but generally it's very beautiful. I find that as an English person, when I go to France, I find I really become aware of how awkward and reserved I am as a Brit. You know, I realise that, you know, I'm really, really English, and I start to get all awkward and I act like Hugh Grant when I don't understand something, whereas the French are just a lot more direct. They just say exactly what they think, whereas I'm kind of going, well, I'm, you know, terribly sorry. And they, you know, they're just a bit more direct about it. I find that that kind of culture shock experience has two sides. One side is that you end up judging the new culture. You sort of judge the culture and you sort of say, oh, this is strange, or that's wrong, these people are weird. Or the flip side is that you judge yourself and you end up feeling kind of a bit neurotic, and you think, oh, I must be making a fool of myself, I'm an idiot, I'm getting it all wrong. So it's kind of, when it's bad, it kind of swings between that kind of like, oh, these people are idiots, and between that feeling and oh my God, I'm an idiot, you know. But it's all part of the fun and all part of the learning process. So yeah, sometimes I feel like I don't fit in, like I'm just sticking out like a sore thumb. I'm the English guy, Mr. Bean in Paris kind of thing, you know, making a fool of myself, getting everything wrong, getting lost on the metro system, trying to understand where I am in the middle of town. You know, I feel a bit like an alien sometimes. I'm scared of making a fool of myself when I talk to people in French. I'm worried about coming across as rude or stupid. You know, but generally I often feel like, you know, Luke, you should feel lucky to be here, because it really is an amazing place to be. And quite often I catch myself in Paris and I just sort of realize, oh my God, I'm living in Paris. I can't believe this. Here I am on the, you know, Champs-Élysées, and I'm living a Parisian life, and it really is fantastic. So, you know, I feel lucky to be able to have this opportunity. And I would say to you, if you're thinking about coming to Paris, then I would recommend it. I think it's a stunning place, and it's a very interesting place. Of course, it's different. It's always going to be different in another country, but that is all part of the fun of living in another country for a while and visiting. This is at least an hour and a half now. I'm sure I'm going to come back to the subject of French again. Probably I'll make some reflections on the language, like learning French and speaking French. So I think reflecting on my experiences of learning French could be quite interesting for you, because you can see how much it's similar to your experiences of learning English. In fact, I welcome your advice on how I should learn French, but I will be applying my approach to language learning, which is to kind of basically just try to express myself as much as I can, just try and work things out from context, just practice, try and imitate the locals. Obviously, it's more a much more complicated process than that. But I've run out of time in this episode. So I certainly hope that was interesting. I hope that I didn't bore the pants off you by just rambling on and on in my inimitable fashion. But I do hope that you managed to gain something from listening to this. Well, of course you did. You've just listened to an hour and a half of spoken English. As well as the English listening practice and the vocabulary that hopefully you will have picked up from this, I hope also you gain some sense of what it is like to go and live in another country, or to go specifically and live in Paris. If you're thinking of visiting, I would say go for it. It's a really fantastic place. That's all for this episode of the podcast. I've got, you know, plenty of things to say to you and lots of other ideas for podcasts in the future. And hopefully, as I said before, I'm going to have a bit more time to devote to doing these episodes. So watch this space. Thanks again, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to Luke's English Podcast. We're now on 1 hour and 29 minutes and 10 seconds of the podcast. I wonder if I can keep it going until 1 hour and 30 minutes. I don't think I will. I think I'm just going to stop at 1 hour and 29 minutes and 29 seconds. Let's see if I can do that. So just drawing the whole podcast to a close on the 1:29:29 second mark. Here it is. Bye, 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 bye.
Thanks very much for listening to Luke's English Podcast. Don't forget you can visit teacherluke.podomatic.com for more information.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.